Welcome to this week's edition of Legal Line, right here on the Common Sense and Justice Network. You find us each and every Wednesday, 3 p.m. Pacific time, talking about your legal problems, maybe talking to a guest or two, taking your legal questions and hopefully pointing you in the right direction with regard to your legal problems. We try each week to demystify the law and translate that legalese. And again, hopefully point you in the right direction with regard to your legal problems. It's a challenge, and we try to accept that challenge each and every Wednesday afternoon. Of course, you can always find us in the Bobcast format. You don't have to actually be here for the live session. You can, of course, you're always welcome to be here for the live session, but join us anytime at bobpittman.com. Look for the Legal Line Archive. Check out some of the past shows. We've got a lot of fun and interesting guest interviews and questions that have come up over the past few months. And so check in from time to time and leave a comment. We had kind of a fun interview with the Whatcom County Sheriff recently, and I noticed several people chimed in and said, oh, that's what he sounds like. That's interesting. Good job. Good job. Had a lot of fun. We went up to Whatcom County to visit with Sheriff Bill Elfo and had a great time talking about that. Hey, be sure to keep an eye out for our Bill of Rights project. That's going to be coming out hopefully sometime in May of 2011, and we're going to put up a separate page for the Bill of Rights looking for your comments. You'll be able to hear the Bill of Rights in a very interesting format. Learn about it. A lot of us know one or two of them, we think. But do we know all 10 amendments? And the answer is probably no. I'll bet there's somebody out there who does know them. But a lot of people kind of say, well, yeah, there's something, you know, something about guns and something about freedom of speech and religion and something or other. But do you really know them all? Well, you know, you'll have to check in. We'll have some resources. We'll be having kind of a little bit of fun with the Bill of Rights, learning in a fun environment. It's open for everybody, so keep an eye out for that new page that'll be coming up, and I think you'll enjoy hearing from the different people who have contributed to the Bill of Rights, at least the reading of the Bill of Rights. So check in from time to time at bobpittman.com. Send us your comments, send us your questions. You can send Jeff an email with a question during the week, jeff@bobpittman.com. jeff@bobpittman.com. Be sure to do so, and then you can give us a call, too, at 253-471. What am I doing here? 471-9694. I had to think for a second. It's a different number than the regular office line. So give us a call during the program if you have a question. Otherwise, send us an email, check in, comments, suggestions for programs, upcoming programs. Happy to take those as well. Hey, I think Diane's with us today, and she's got, yep, there she is right there. You can't see her. We need a camera, don't we?
No,
we don't. Okay. I got a new laptop, you know, and there's a camera, I think. I've got to check to see. Mm-hmm. Because it could be recording my every move. I don't know.
Well, your phone records every location, so.
Yeah, that's, you know, I wonder, it'd be interesting to access that maybe, and I wonder if it draws a little map. You know, here's where Bob's been for the past 2 days, you know, and I don't know. I'm not sure. I guess that's good. I don't know. I don't go any place that odd or strange, I guess.
It helps me because I've taken pictures in different places, and it says where the picture was taken.
Well, that's interesting.
Like Buffalo.
Yeah.
I have a picture from Buffalo.
Well, that's kind of fun.
Yeah.
Not bad. Not bad. So we had a couple questions come in, I know, during the week.
We did. The first one is from Julie, and she wants to know about a buy-sell agreement. She and her partner own a small business together. What happens if one of them dies?
Ooh.
Is a buy-sell agreement a good idea? And what is a buy-sell agreement?
Oh, good question. Good question. You know, if you have if you're in a small business with somebody else, it's a terrific idea to have a buy-sell agreement. It could be, even if it's a simple partnership, it could be a simple partnership, could be a limited liability company, a corporation. Maybe you're both, you know, shareholders in a corporation. And, you know, if the value of the business is really low, maybe it's not quite as critical, but if you've got any kind of value going on, I mean, it could be a real disaster. Let's imagine Julie is in business with this person and the other person dies. Well, all of a sudden, she might be in business with that person's relatives, maybe spouse or partner, parents, kids, the dog. Maybe it wouldn't be so bad being in business with the dog. I don't know. Dogs have good sense, I think, good common sense. But all of a sudden, you're in partnership with somebody else. Maybe you don't want to be. So in real simple form, a buy-sell agreement, and it does a number of things, but in real simple form, a buy-sell agreement is going to say, hey, Julie or her partner, one of them die. The buy-sell agreement forces the estate, we'll call it, for the partner who died, to sell the interest in the business over to the surviving partner. Now, that could be a problem because if it's a large enough asset, a business, then how is the surviving partner going to pay the estate to buy the business? And that's where life insurance comes in. And so each partner would own a life insurance policy on the other partner's life. Okay, that sounds kind of risky maybe. For some partners it might be. I'm imagining Nancy Grace or something on TV with the latest edition of Mysteries or something. But if you have the buy-sell agreement that compels the estate to sell and the partner is compelled to buy and the buying partner, the surviving partner, has the money from the life insurance, then it's a pretty easy transaction. And the estate ends up with money. The partner ends up with the full business. So it's a darn good idea to have that and to have the life insurance that goes with it to make sure that it can be purchased. If there isn't the ability to get life insurance, maybe you've got someone who's uninsurable, then they really need to think about how that business is going to be purchased from the other partner's estate or family. And maybe it's a long-term contract, maybe who knows what it is. Or maybe the other partner is going to make a gift of the business interest over to the surviving partner. You know, there's no way to say exactly what should be done in Julie's case without sitting down with her and really talking through all the issues and discussing what should happen. And that's the thing I usually recommend to people is sit down with your partners sometimes and play what-if games. Say, okay, what if one of us just wants out? We just don't like this anymore. What happens? So now everybody sits around and comes up with an answer. Well, that answer gets translated into a buy-sell agreement of some sort. What happens if someone dies? Whatever it might be, just play what-if games, and then the answers to those what-if games go into the buy-sell agreement or partnership arrangement and agreements and stuff. And you get, you know, once you've played your what-if games, made your notes, then have the attorney that you're going to work with play what-if games with you. Because she might have some really interesting what-if questions that you didn't think of. So you want to think of the ones on your own and then play what-if with the attorney advisor and discuss it. Probably get a good accountant on board. Every business should have access at least to a good accountant to help with different issues that come up too. So get started.
So what kind of attorney would do this? I wouldn't go to a divorce attorney or a litigation or a... You know,
typically, you'll find some estate planning attorneys do buy-sell arrangements and agreements, a business planning attorney, someone who does incorporations and business advice and so forth. So you do want to route around a little bit and find somebody. Get some referrals, some recommendations from maybe friends or other people in business, maybe someone you trust at the bank, your banker. You know, if you've got a good relationship, maybe your accountant will know who's doing it. Accountants are a wealth of information, and the accountants know who's out there doing this kind of stuff, too. So they're typically a good choice as well. But you do want to get to someone who does it on a fairly regular basis. Two-person buy-sell agreements are pretty straightforward and easygoing. When you get up into multiple partners, it gets a little trickier, a little harder to put together. You know, you can just imagine. I mean, everybody has different concerns and stuff, and so it is just a lot harder to put all that stuff together.
Is it pretty common? I mean, you think everybody has a will or an estate plan set up or something, but a lot of people don't have those done. And you think, oh, people that are in businesses together oftentimes, well, just have it done. Is it common, or do people run into problems?
Oh, I'd say most people don't do anything.
Oh.
They just get into it because they're running a business. They're getting in, getting it going, getting it up and running and blasting away, hopefully, making lots of money and stuff. And hopefully it's a satisfying thing when it comes to the business itself. But I think most people fail to do the basic planning that needs to be in place, like a buy-sell agreement. I think it's missed an awful lot.
Yeah, and it's something everybody should do, just like
it really is.
Getting their affairs in order.
It really
in
is.
Real life.
Very important. It goes right along with the estate planning that everybody should be doing. Definitely.
All right. Well, are you ready for the next
sure.
question? It looks like it's business week because we had an email from Jim, who is starting a new business,
good.
And he's doing it himself. He keeps hearing about limited liability company or something like that. Should he check into this, or what is it?
Good question.
I hear that, too. What's it all about?
Yeah. Well, you know, when you're getting into a business, and in this case it's just Jim apparently by himself, so it's a lot easier, of course. You don't have all the partner issues that that so many people do, just like with Julie. But it's usually a good idea to operate a business in some kind of an entity. I mean, the default is what we call a sole proprietorship, where someone just starts a business, they own everything, they're out there, and they're exposed to the world for all the liabilities of the business, too. So typically you want to have some kind of an entity, and usually the two entities that you see for the most part in a business would be a limited liability company or a corporation. And within a corporation, you're going to see two different versions, and they're tax versions. Every profit corporation here in Washington is essentially the same under the same laws. But people will elect subchapter S treatment sometimes on their corporation because the default mechanism for a corporation tax-wise is that it pays its own tax bill, it files its own tax return. It's what we refer to sometimes as a C corporation. That's under subchapter C of the Internal Revenue Code. But a lot of times a small business wants to pass everything through to themselves on their own tax return, and so they'll do what's called a subchapter S election. It's electing with the IRS for treatment under subchapter S of the Internal Revenue Code. And what that means then is that instead of paying corporate tax and then paying an individual tax, possibly there's a double taxation issue, maybe not, it depends on how you structure it. But with the subchapter S, everything flows through. It's called a pass-through entity. Everything flows through to the individual shareholder or shareholders, and they put it on their own tax return. So you'll have a tax return for the corporation, but it's just going to recite what happened, and then it's going to say in so many words, hey, IRS, look over on Jim's tax return, because you're going to find all the bottom line income or losses over on Jim's 1040. And so I would say to Jim, either look into a subchapter S corporation or a limited liability company. The limited liability company is the easiest form, especially for one person, a single member, because you don't even have a tax return you have to do for the business. You basically end up putting that on probably a Schedule C on his individual income tax return 1040. So it's going to be like reporting as a sole proprietor, the simplest form of tax reporting. But he'll have the protection, like a corporation, in terms of people being able to maybe sue him personally for the obligations of the business. Now, when I say that, you get a lot of protection, but remember that if you sign things like the lease agreement personally or your business loans personally, then they've got your business entity plus you on the line. So you don't always get out of those liabilities, but the business liabilities, like maybe a slip and fall, things like that on the business premises and everything, are typically going to be held within that limited liability company. And, you want to get proper insurance. Insurance is always our first line of defense. Now, there's a great book, and we have it on our recommended reading list. It's the Oh, boy. Come on, Bob. The guide, legal guide for starting and running a small business. I had to rack my brain for just a second there, which is hard some days. But the legal guide for starting and running a small business. I should have had it up, but I didn't know. It's on our reading list, recommending reading list at bobpittman.com. Fred Steingold is the author. It's a great book. If you're thinking about getting into business, or you're in business already and you're saying, what did I do? Then think about getting that book. It's a great one. The Legal Guide for Starting and Running a Small Business. Highly recommend it. There's some good resources on the Internet. Always be careful when you're out prowling around on the Internet that you end up with some good, reliable material. And one way is to go to good, trusted sources. We try to put some good recommendations up on our reading list, and that is one of them.
Well, who puts together a limited liability?
Oh, limited liability company? Oh, good question. Yeah, good question. Here in Washington, in a lot of states, have made it very easy to form them on your own. At least the bare limited liability company format can be formed even online through the Corporations Division of the Secretary of State. But you want your background documents to be proper, and so where an attorney might get involved is helping you with what's called an operating agreement for the limited liability company. There are some good resources on that. One of my favorite publishers is Nolo Press, and you'll find that they have some good self-help kind of guides on simple operating agreements, and at least give you a start. Now, sometimes we use our self-help books just to kind of get us going and thinking about stuff so we have good questions to ask an attorney when we get to talk with the attorney. I'm trying to scope out some of the websites, and we'll try to do a report later on some of the websites that are out there that are helping people. Some of them are not that helpful. I ran across a situation recently where someone needed a federal ID number. Now, you can go online with IRS.gov and get your federal ID number for free. But unfortunately, this fellow went on to Google or one of the search engines, and nothing against them, but had just done a search and unfortunately went to one of the sites where they charge you for it. Now, they're doing a service. They're helping to make sure you actually get it. So some people might make use of that. But a lot of people can just go to IRS.gov and get their ID number, federal ID number, without having to spend any money. And so think about it. That's where having a lawyer, sometimes even as a coach. I like with a business, I like to suggest that you have a kind of an attorney on the sidelines where you've had a meeting, maybe you got some help with your operating agreement and stuff, and the attorney knows generally what you're up to. When a question comes up, maybe a contract that you want to have reviewed or something comes up, the attorney's already on board. You're not paying them every month, but you've acquainted them with the business, and maybe you can fax over an agreement, and they'll take a look at it, make some comments, fax it back. You burn a little bit of time when you need it, but it's kind of like having your own in-house general counsel, although outhouse. Oh. Attorney in an outhouse. That's not right. Outside counsel, some people would say, you know, leave it to me to put him in the outhouse. Anyway, there's a lot of stuff you can do. Take a look at that book, I think, is a good starting place. Small Business Administration has some good resources, too.
Great. Thanks.
Yeah.
Well, we have one more from Don, and his kids keep telling him that this is a year for him to give them assets to avoid estate and gift taxes.
Oh.
Are they pulling his leg just to get some money out of him, or what's the deal with this one? He's a little nervous.
Well, the kids have been doing their homework, maybe. Maybe listening to some of our Bobcasts. I don't know. It seems like we touched a while back on a little bit of gift tax stuff. But what's happened is for some time we've been able to make annual gifts of now $13,000 per year to anybody, family members or not, and nobody has to pay any tax. There's no gift tax, no estate tax, no income tax. It's just a gift. And those are kind of small exclusion gifts that we've been able to make. They used to be $10,000 a number of years ago, and I actually remember when they were $3,000. That's how far back I go. But they're up to $13,000. But we have this tremendous, tremendous planning opportunity this year and next year. And what's happened is the Congress has said, all right, everybody, you can give not just the $13,000, but you can give up to $5 million this year and next year. Lifetime exclusion. I mean, you up to $5 million. So if you're a husband and wife, you each have a $5 million ability or gifting ability. So I mean, the kids. I mean, and that's not per kid. That's like if we had mom. Well, in this case, I guess we just had Don. So let's say Don is single. Don can give up to a total of $5 million. You know, again, forgetting about the $13,000 gifts, but he could, if he has five kids, he could give them each $1 million this year, and nobody pays any tax, and now it's out of his estate. Of course, he's used up his $5 million exclusion for federal gift tax and estate tax purposes. So if he has more money than $5 million, then it would be subject to tax when he dies, unless he can somehow get that out or give it to a charity or something like that. But it is a tremendous opportunity to get some large gifts out. And here's one of the neat things here in Washington State, not true in every state. Washington State has a lower threshold for estate taxes. We have a $2 million exemption. A few states have an exemption like that or in some cases smaller. But we don't have a gift tax in Washington. So let's imagine Don has a $5 million estate. And he chooses to give $3 million to his three kids, let's say, this year. And so he reduces his estate down to $2 million and dies next year. By the way, we want Don to hang in there longer. But let's say he dies next year in our little example. Okay, he's got to bring the estate tax for the federal system, the exemption is $5 million. You take the $3 million he gave away last year plus the $2 million left. He's at $5 million. There's no estate tax. For Washington State purposes, you don't take into account the $3 million gift that was made last year. All you've got is a $2 million estate. You've got no Washington State estate tax. You just avoided Washington State estate tax on that $3 million and saved, in that example, let's say you'd have $100,000 on the first million, $140,000, I think, on the second million, so that's $240,000, and another $150,000. On the third million, I think, that's $390,000 you saved by giving the kids $3 million this year. So, Don, start writing those checks.
The kids weren't lying.
the kids have a point, you know.
And what if Don has a wife?
Well, she's got $5 million bucks, too.
Wow.
I mean, you know, most of the people we know could give away everything they own and still have room left over. You know? some of our listeners have more than $10 million, and so they would still have something left over. Here's one of the neat things about making gifts. Let's say Don lives a long time. Let's say Don lives another 20 years. Let's push him way out there. And let's say he gives away the $5 million this year. Well, when he dies, if he had kept that $5 million in his estate, it probably 20 years from now, unless he really does some bad investing, probably the $5 million would be worth a lot more 20 years from now than it is today, we hope. So that would make his estate very large, and there'd be a ton of tax to pay. If he gives away the $5 million and then lives 20 years, he's given away not only the $5 million, but all the appreciation on the $5 million for the next 20 years. Let's say it grew to $10 million in 20 years. Then all that $10 million is out of his estate, not just the five. So the appreciation and, more importantly, the tax on the appreciation has been saved. So you can save a tremendous amount when you make these gifts. And there are ways to make gifts, Don, where you can give stuff to the kids, but you keep some legal strings on the gifts so they don't get to just cash in and buy the Bentley. Or the 20 season tickets to the Mariners for all their friends. So you can put strings on those gifts, and you can have a little bit of fun on the way. I'll just mention one fun way of making gifts, and that is a family limited partnership. And there are different variations of it. Sometimes people use a version of a limited liability company. We have a new version of a limited partnership here in Washington this year, which is very exciting. And a family limited partnership allows you to make gifts to the kids and grandchildren and other folks, and yet retain the control and have a lot of fun with the partnership over the coming years to maybe teach the younger generation about how you even got there to begin with to have the $5 million to give. And so lots of fun stuff can come from the partnership. You can get people ready to receive whatever it is. And you don't have to have $5 million to do this. You could do it with $100,000. You could do it with $500,000, $1 million. You can do it with an amount that's way less than $5 million. Make some gifts, reduce the size of your estate. Maybe you're just trying to get below the state exemption. And you can have some real fun with the family, working on different projects, learning together, teaching the younger generation how to take over and act responsibly when they do end up with the inheritance. And since we're on inheritance, just for a second, I'm going to mention my saran wrap again. I don't want to pass that up. Keep in mind that when you, whether you do any of this stuff, other stuff or not, when you pass things down to the next generation, you're allowed to put this legal saran wrap around those assets to protect the heirs from things like lawsuits and divorces and stuff like that. And more of us need to be thinking about doing that kind of stuff for our heirs to make sure that they don't end up at the other end of a lawsuit losing their inherited assets. You can protect them if you want to. It's something to talk about, so ask your attorney about the saran wrap. And the attorney will say, oh, no, you've been listening to Bob again. I was telling someone the other day, I got an email from an attorney in another city, and he said, okay, Pittman, what is this stupid cloud trust? He says, a client came in and said they heard you talking about a cloud trust. So what is it? And he was doing it nice, tongue-in-cheek and stuff, but I explained what it was. We'll do that on a different program, though. We'll talk about cloud trusts and maybe talk more about saran wrap, too, in the future on another segment of Bob Pittman's Legal Line. And those are probably the questions for the day. Hey, send your questions in. Let Jeff know what you'd like us to talk about, because we're here for you. And we have lots of fun guests lined up for future segments, but we also like to take time and take your questions, whether you call in with them or email them in. Either way, we like to take your general legal questions. Again, I should point out that damages resulting from advice given on this program is strictly limited to what you paid for the advice, wouldn't you know it? Leave it to the lawyers to come up with this stuff, and we do. We love to do that kind of stuff. Hey, keep an eye out for us, bobpittman.com. Stop by, leave your notes, comments, check out the website, and be watching for our Bill of Rights project page that's going to be coming up soon. Exciting stuff. Civics, very important to all of us. We need to keep the dialogue going if we're going to keep democracy alive and well here in the United States. And of course, a lot of other great countries out there that have neat systems, but nothing like ours. Nothing like ours. And our Bill of Rights is unique in the world. So we'll be learning more about that. So stay in control of your legal affairs, at least until next week. This is Bob Pittman. This is Bob Pittman's Legal Line right here at bobpittman.com. See you next week.